And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, recipes, nature, sustainability, interconnectedness, relationships, and yes, life itself. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sitarani Palomar.
The cost of growth, navigating a foodopoly, is our topic today. And in this hour, we are taking a close look at the food industry, at who owns whom, and the fact that 50% of all food in this country that is sold only by four companies, and of course how all that affects us as eaters and consumers, or better maybe co-creators of this food movement. The cost of growth, navigating a foodopoly, our topic on An Organic Conversation this week. And we have the author of Foodopoly, a new book on this topic, join us today. Before we dive in, though, we have a news piece.
Sita. News, yes. Yeah. Very exciting to hear. On January 1st, Concord, Massachusetts instituted a new piece of legislation that bans plastic bottles, which is, I think, huge, really exciting. What the new bylaw says, in the town of Concord, it is now unlawful to sell non-sparkling, unflavored drinking water in single plastic bottles of 1 liter or less. So I find this really encouraging. And part of that is because, you know, we had a piece of news last year about how Hawaii had banned plastic bags. So I have family that lives in Hawaii, and I was visiting them over the holidays before their plastic bag ban went into effect.
Which is now in effect.
Yeah, exactly. And this was right before. And everybody seemed to know. We have a limited amount of time where we're going to be able to get plastic bags. So we need to think about conservation. They were thinking about starting to collect fabric bags, about really carefully using their plastic bags because there was going to be a limited supply. I already saw behavior changing before the law went into effect, and I can only imagine how much better that's going to get. So I'm excited to see this happening. And, you know, we've had a lot of really cool things like this happen on the mainland, but this is big.
Well, and water bottles is really big because you see them everywhere, literally everywhere, and people carry them. And you know, it takes 17 million barrels of oil a year to make all the plastic bottles we use in the United States.
17 million barrels.
And that's enough to fuel 1.3 million cars for a year. And in 2007, Americans consumed over 50 billion single-serve bottles of water. And with recycling only at 23%, that means 38 billion bottles ended up in the landfill or potentially in the Pacific Gyre where there's that island of plastic or something like that.
That's right. Landfill, you know, sounds like they got somewhere, but we are talking, what, 10,000 years before they really break down, thousands of years, affecting animals, groundwater, of course, plastic leeches, aquatic life, birds that eat them.
So, and Mark, I mean, with the traveling that you've done, you've seen some really smart options for getting water that doesn't have to come in a plastic bottle.
Absolutely. You know, there are a lot of airports are putting in these faucets that are connected to a water purifier that you can just fill up your water bottle, right? And we saw them at Eco Farm.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
When we were there a few weeks back, they just hooked them up to the faucets. They went through a purifier and people could fill up their water bottles. But of course, then there are companies who are draining our own water and selling it back to us who don't make any profit off of that.
Yeah,
which is really, there's already some, of course, as with any change, good or bad, there's already another voice coming up. Some businesses in the town of Concord in Massachusetts, where this ban has gotten into effect, the ban of plastic bottles for water, some businesses are complaining and are trying to circumvent by selling larger sizes of bottles, of plastic bottles, and others. And It's interesting. I mean, these are not the businesses that make the water, but you're right, Mark. We pollute our water, then we filter it, then we sell it back to the people that we polluted the water to begin with for. There's a breakdown of, you know, a gallon of tap water, if you filter it at home, should cost X, and the insane cost of buying a bottle, a liter of water back from the companies that, you know, when industry pollute our water to begin with to make tap water unsafe. So, yes, one would assume or hope that all people will find this reasonable, people and businesses alike, hearing the numbers and the statistics of what is being used, 17 million barrels of oil to make 50 billion single serve water bottles. That's mind boggling. So yes, go Concord, Massachusetts. We will stay on the news train for you to feature new initiatives of other towns, including Hawaii, which now has a plastic bag ban. Mm-hmm. Do you know if that's just the mainland or?
You know, actually, the plan, if I recall, we had this news piece last year, is for all of the islands to do it. Some of the islands already have, but I think that the big island of Hawaii had recently put in the legislation, and some other ones, I think Oahu and Maui may have already had it, but they did have a plan to get all of the islands compliant with that new law.
Good work being done everywhere. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And today we're taking a close look at the food industry in this week's episode, The Cost of Growth, Navigating a Foodopoly. That and more when we come back. Stay tuned.
Love and happiness.
SPUD stands for Sustainable Produce Urban Delivery. SPUD delivers the highest quality organic produce and the best locally sourced grocery items one can find directly to your doorstep. It's easy, it's convenient, and it supports your local economy. On every delivery day, SPUD takes at least 100 cars off the road that would have otherwise been driving to the grocery store. Reduce your carbon footprint, save time, and save money when grocery shopping with SPUD. Place your order today at spud.com. That's SPUD.com.
Are you a chef, have a catering business, or planning a party, or simply just love organic produce? If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, walk right in to Earl's Organic Produce. Anyone can buy directly from us at wholesale prices. You don't have to be a natural food store to enjoy the freshest and most delicious organic produce. We are located on the San Francisco Produce Market at 2101 Gerald Avenue. We look forward to seeing you.
Walk-in hours are Monday through Friday throughout the night from 10 p.m. to 10 a.m. Minimum purchase is one box or flat, cash or checks only. For more information, visit earlsorganic.com.
Frey Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frey never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frey organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frey Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at freywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Love and happiness. But wait a minute, something's going wrong. Someone's on the phone. 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Talking about how she can make it right, yeah. Happiness is when you really feel good.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Our topic today is the cost of growth, navigating a foodopoly, with a great guest today, author Winona Hauter, who coined the term foodopoly, and is also which is also the title of her new book, Foodopoly, The Battle Over the Future of Food and Farming in America. But before we dive into the topic, as always, we are starting off with our weekly health and beauty tips from Sitarani Palomar, a.k.a. Chef Sita. Sita, are you ready?
I am ready. Are you?
Here's Chef Sita and her holistic bite.
Thanks, Helga. Well, if you are a food gadget person like me, I'm a little bit obsessed. You should see how packed my kitchen is. Then you've probably noticed that ceramic knives are one of the hottest, most popular kitchen tools today. And when I first saw these white ceramic knives, I was kind of put off by them. I think that they're deceiving, right? When I teach cooking classes, I felt this need to always warn people to not underestimate this knife that may look like it's made out of plastic because it's actually made out of ceramic. And these ceramic knives are extremely lightweight and devilishly sharp, which is one of the reasons why I felt to always put a disclaimer on them. But over time, and particularly recently, I've come to love them for many of the reasons why I was adverse to them to begin with, and even some many more reasons I've discovered since using them. Ceramic knives hold an edge extremely well. And what that means when a chef says holds an edge, it means that it keeps its sharpness. It keeps that really, really fine point longer than, say, stainless steel knives. Traditionally, chefs use a high-carbon stainless steel metal alloy, and you sharpen that over time. Every time you use it, you hone it to keep it aligned, and then you sharpen it periodically to make sure that it holds its edge. But the ceramic knives hold their edge for a very long time without sharpening, naturally. In fact, you cannot sharpen them. And that is one of the reasons why you need to handle them very carefully, because they're kind of brittle. There are certain things that you cannot do with a ceramic knife because it could damage the knife. And then once you crack it, you can't sharpen it again unless you send it to the manufacturer. But they break easily, so you can't use them on hard surfaces like marble or glass. But because they're so sharp and because they're lightweight, they're like a dream to work with. I find that my wrists are kind of sensitive, and if I'm cutting a lot of produce, I find that my wrists are less affected over time because it's a lot lighter. And then my favorite thing about them is that they actually prevent oxidation and discoloration in your foods. When people are selling or showing you the benefits of ceramic knives, they'll usually do a demo where they cut an apple with a ceramic knife and they cut an apple with a stainless steel knife. And what you notice over time is that the apple that was cut with the stainless steel knife will start to brown, whereas the ceramic knife does not, or it browns much, much slower. And that's because ceramic knives are chemically inert, meaning that they don't react with acid in food. And also because of that sharpness, it doesn't break the cell walls, the plant cell walls of your produce as jaggedly, even if that's an imperceptible jagged cut, as a stainless steel knife does, or as many stainless steel knives do, because they're usually not kept as sharp as these ceramic knives will stay. So that means that less surface area is exposed to oxygen, so less will be oxidized. So I've become a big fan of these, and they're super fast and easy to use. You just have to know how to use them, and go out and try it and see if you think this is a good addition to your kitchen. And I'll post some photos on Facebook about the before and afters of cutting with a ceramic knife. But I find this a really fun topic to share. So that's this week's Holistic Bite.
Yeah, ceramic knives. I'm sure they're great. Actually, I got to use one just a few weeks back, and it is really like cutting into warm butter. It's amazing how sharp it is. But if you, like me, find multiple uses for all the stuff I have at home, for example, using one as a screwdriver, it breaks in a second. I don't know. There's a flexibility in steel knives. I hear everything you say, and that's fascinating to me. But it's something that one needs to get used to, for sure. The weight, which is feather light, the extreme sharpness. And then anytime you move it, not forward, backwards, but in any way sideways in an angle, once you cut into something, like even I would think as hard as a kabocha squash or something, it could break. It most likely will break. So, Mark, do you have any experience with ceramic knives?
Well, not as screwdrivers.
Thank God.
But no, actually, this is fascinating to me because I've watched them and watched people use them from afar and read about them and things like that, but just have never tried one. You would love using those on your produce because of that whole oxidization. Anything that you're putting on like a crudité plate or something like that wouldn't brown up or turn color, which would do it less fast, which would be great.
That is amazing. Actually, I thought the apple would oxidize, not that the knife or the way you cut it makes it more so or less so. That's fascinating.
Well, if you cut it with a stainless steel knife, that's a metal. It's a metal alloy. So you're actually having this reaction between metal and acid.
Yes.
Mark, you were saying.
Well, and so that would be, there's one huge advantage right there for that type of thing. And the lightness, like you said, if people have arthritis or anything like that, it would be beneficial to them. And then also what I've always been taught around knife skills is the sharper your knife. You want to get cut with a sharp knife, which you probably if you're listening out there, you're going, what? But it actually, because it creates a cleaner cut in
That's
your skin,
true.
It'll heal faster. And so a ceramic knife, even though it would is very sharp and will cut you, it doesn't leave a jagged cut, which heals slower.
Well, and you're actually less likely to cut yourself if you're using a sharp knife, because sharp knives work the way they're supposed to. Dull knives, they don't get into that piece of fruit or vegetable as cleanly, which is why they tend to slide or not go where you're directing them, and that's how injuries happen.
Because usually you're not aiming for your fingers, but it tends to end up there, yes.
Does.
Well, fascinating. Thank you, Sita, for that weekly update of the world of beauty and tips and kitchen and cooking and health.
The whole world
and,
of it.
And yeah, speaking of structural integrity of all your kitchen tools, the ingredients in your kitchen, including your knives, should be similar to the ones on your skin, the products you use there. The Holistic Bite brought to you by the natural beauty company Ecobella, because it's exactly everything you use should have.
Structural integrity.
Well, especially the knives you use on your skin.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Lord.
No, Ecobella,
oh,
Lord. an amazing line of beauty and body care products with the best ingredients.
Structural integrity is an interesting thing because there are some ingredients that mainstream cosmetic companies put in as stabilizers or to give their cosmetics a very specific texture when it's applied. And sometimes those things are synthetic plastics or you know, like we were talking about petroleum oil
exactly.
In our news piece, things that you don't want. But the nice thing about Ecobella's products, which are organic and plant-based, they're all vegan products, is that they're light enough when I put their makeup on my skin. My skin breathes better, and that allows that regeneration and healing on the topical level to happen.
Yes.
And your lungs don't have to work as hard.
Ecobella, a wonderful line of body care products and intelligent cosmetics. And as Sita said, of course, all of Ecobella products are preservative-free, gluten-free, and cruelty-free. Check it out and let us know what you think. Ecobella.com. That's ECOBELLA.com. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
2 weeks ago, we had a show on the Food and Drug Administration's new food safety regulations, and we discussed the impact, positive and negative, on the food industry and small-scale producers. Last week, we talked about the importance of nutrition education, and along the same lines, our topic today is the cost of growth. Navigating a foodopoly. Over 50% of all food in this country is sold by only four companies. 50% of all food sold by only four companies. Who owns whom, and what are the consequences of a highly concentrated industrial food system? With us now, joining us from Seattle, Washington, is author Winona Howder to speak about her new book, Foodopoly, The Battle Over the Future of Food and Farming in America. Winona, thanks for being on the show today.
I'm so glad to be here.
Oh, we're so glad to have you.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for joining us. So, foodopoly, a term that really you coined, I believe. What does that mean? What's a foodopoly by your definition?
Well, it's referring to the fact that only a small handful of corporations control the food that we eat. It looks like there are a lot of brands when you go into the grocery store, but when you look at who owns the brands, there are about 20 companies that are producing most of those brands, and for grocery chains that are selling a large percentage of retail or of conventional foods. And unfortunately, the same is true in the organics industry, where 14 of those 20 food processors also control the organics industry or the brands that you see in the natural food store.
So, I know, I found that to be such a huge surprise, Winona. I remember when we were working on the Prop 37 initiative here in California, and yes, on Prop 37 meant that we would get GMO labeling on our food ingredients. And surprisingly, there was a study published by the Cornucopia Institute that said there are a lot of natural and organic brands that you do not realize are supporting the opposition, which is no GMO labeling, because they're actually owned by a major corporation whose majority of business may not be in the organic world. And I was just so surprised. It really came down to a handful of corporations.
That's exactly true. I mean, companies like PepsiCo and General Mills contributed against Prop 37. And these are companies that basically view organic foods, the niche market that they can sell to a certain type of consumer. They have no allegiance to what organic originally was to mean, and they don't want to have their other brands threatened by having a labeling law that requires genetically engineered food to be labeled.
Which seems contradicting in terms of the business model, right? Even for a large corporation to own a few organic brands, wouldn't they want those organic brands to succeed and be successful? Meaning, wouldn't it be in the best interest of the company to keep the organic integrity and the organic ethical commitment to the movement as high as the consumer is expecting it to be?
Well, no, I'm afraid that that's not the way it works, because they're selling their organic brand, even if the integrity has been threatened. And in fact, these are the same companies that have lobbied to weaken the organic standard, for instance, with the inclusion of synthetic additives in organic infant food. They lobby very hard to make it cheaper to produce organic food. They've been very active in lobbying to designate this synthetic fertilizer that's a byproduct of producing high fructose syrup and cornstarch and ethanol. And they have lobbied to allow it to be used in making organic food. So it's all about how to get a product to market as cheaply as possible while using their advertising to sell as much of the product as possible.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And we're speaking with Winona Howder, the author of Foodopoly, The Battle Over the Future of Food and Farming in America. And Winona is also the executive director of the Food and Water Watch.
So, Winona, when I'm listening to you, what is the deeper effect of this on the marketplace? What are the larger effects? You've been talking about how it's affecting the organic industry and how it's taking place in the marketplace. But what are those deeper, more profound effects that maybe us average eaters out there just don't really understand?
Well, first of all, when you have only a few companies that dominate the market, they're able to charge a lot more for the product because there's not competition. I mean, look at Whole Foods market. Whole Foods now dominates the organic retail sales industry, and they have a distributor called United Natural Foods, Inc. that is the distributor, and it's gone public, and in fact, it's responsible for the cost of organic food, for there to be, for it to be more expensive, because you have this middleman that's profiting. So whenever you have a large entity that basically controls the market, this is not a good thing for the organics industry, because it means that these companies are able to do what benefits them economically, not what is good for the organic consumer. And I think the larger effect is that having a few companies that control the market means that the foods being produced are geared at making people buy things that aren't healthy for them. So most of them spend most of their food budget on processed food. In fact, it's 90% of the food budget goes towards processed food. And these food companies have used food scientists to figure out a recipe using salt, sugar, and fat to addict people to unhealthy processed food. And So we also see a lot of organic products now produced by these same companies. So organic Oreos. This might lull somebody into thinking that an Oreo is good for you. You know, it's a little bit of an oxymoron, an organic Oreo.
Yeah,
so
and Winona,
I think
some
there
of the
are a lot of implications for our food system and for what organics means, and about whether we have a healthy food supply that most people can enjoy and afford to enjoy.
And Winona, some of the other things that I remembered reading in your book, which was so wonderful to get to flip through in advance of this interview, was that there are things happening as a result of this somewhat corrupt system that we're not aware of. For example, the poultry farmer that feeds a majority of Americans who eat chicken is making less than $15,000 annually as his salary, and that there are even beyond our country negative impact of this. There are famines overseas that are directly or indirectly related. Can you expand a little bit on some of these consequences that we are not aware of?
Yes. So I think that the impacts on food producers are largely unrecognized. And in fact, it's become fashionable to blame farmers for a lot of the problems in the food system when they're largely also victims of a food system out of control. And the poultry industry is a very good example. You have companies like Tyson and Purdue that have a stranglehold on this industry. They hire contract poultry growers who are like, well, we liken them to chicken sitters. They actually have to borrow the money to build the big warehouse. They take on all of the debt and all of the liability for the waste. The company benefits, and the company owns the genetics of the egg. They own the birds. They own the feed. They direct the growth of the bird, and they require the poultry contract grower to keep making deep investments in their facility to kind of keep them a serf. That's how many of the poultry growers who have come forward liken themselves to serfs. And it's a last-ditch effort to try to save the family farm, and it's pretty outrageous that they're making only an average of $15,000 a year. And you can look at a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken in the Manhattan market that I checked when I was writing Foodopoly. It was going for $19.09. The poultry contract grower got 25 cents. The company like Tyson or the other big company, JBS, got $3 to $5. And the rest of it went to KFC.
So the farmer only made 25 cents on that $20.
25 cents.
We're speaking with Winona Hauter, the author of Foodopoly, The Battle Over the Future of Food and Farming in America. She's also the executive director of the organization Food and Water Watch. There's a great website. It's called foodopoly.org. Winona, stay with us. We want to know what we can do as co-creators as we are building this food system in this country. Stay with us. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
At Testa Epicurus Guild, we provide tea and coffee from the regions of the world known to produce the finest of their kind. Always certified organic and fair trade, we stand for exceptional taste and highest quality. Every cup of our tea and coffee is connected to the soil and the people working the land. We have searched the world for the best ingredients and invite you to enjoy Testa tea and coffee. Find Desta at your natural food store or online at desta.com. That is DESTA.com.
Are you interested in making healthy food your profession? Bowman College is a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. Their professional training programs prepare individuals for successful careers as nutrition consultants and natural chefs. Study at one of four locations in California and Colorado, or learn from home in a self-paced mentor distance learning program. Find out more about their classes on holistic nutrition and culinary arts at BaumanCollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N College.org.
If you're looking for a green, full-service website and internet technology agency for your business that is affordable and can grow with your company, then visit Percepticon.com. Featuring an award-winning energy-efficient data center, Percepticon provides clients with forward-thinking consulting, strategy, technology, website design, high-performance internet hosting, e-commerce solutions, and mobile apps to meet all your internet needs. Call Percepticon today for all your web and technology needs at 925-937-9000 or visit them at Percepticon.com.
But I will bend the light, pretend that it's somehow.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
We're speaking with Winona Hauder today, the author of Foodopoly, a new book. She's also the executive director of Food and Water Watch. The website for the book is foodopoly.org, about the future of food and farming in America. We're looking at the concentration of food companies. Again, the statistic is that 50% of all food sold is made by only a handful of companies. In fact, only four companies. And that is true for the meat industry, where 90% of all the beef and all the meat in this country sold comes from a handful of companies at most. Both true for the industrial food system as well as the organic food system, and it creates some interesting scenarios where, for example, as Sita brought up, Prop 37 requiring the mandatory labeling of genetic engineered ingredients in food was defeated by a margin of a few hundred thousand people, only possible because the big industry companies poured in $40 million to defeat the campaign, even though those companies owned organic and natural brands as well. Mark, you have some really interesting statistics in this regard of how specifically the organic marketplace has grown.
Well, you know, in listening to Winona and then looking at her book and all the stuff, I was going, okay, you know, I've been an organic advocate for years. And whenever I get these statistics about how much we've been growing, it always makes me feel like, okay, we're moving in a positive direction. Because, you know, 17,600 certified acres here in the country. There's farms in the country. There are 4.6 million acres of organic farmland across the United States. Organic farms are 35% more profitable than the average farm. Now, when I start reading those, I'm going, oh, we're on the right direction, right? We're moving in a good place. And yet...
And I was always an advocate saying that any 1,000 acres that go from conventional agriculture to organic agriculture is 1,000 acres less of pesticides. So that is definitely a move in the right direction. But it does come at a price, as Winona clearly shows us in her book. Yes, Sita.
And we recently, in the last few weeks, got back from the EcoFarm Conference, which is, you know, a gathering of 1,600 food policymakers and farmers and everything in between. And overwhelmingly, what people said was the most encouraging thing about this year's conference was the number of young farmers. And so I want to hear, Winona, you've put all of this incredible research into your new book, Foodopoly, and you are coming to this conclusion that we need to make some serious changes, clearly, but not just about our personal choices, also about our politics. So what can we do to bring about legislative change, and how can we behave as consumers to promote a healthier food system?
Well, the reason that I wrote Foodopoly was it's really exciting that we have the local food movement, and that there's so much excitement about local food, and that people are voting with their fork. But we need people to become politicized and to not just vote with their fork. We need collective action. We need people to vote with their vote, and then to hold these elected officials accountable, because breaking the foodopoly and fixing the dysfunctional food system is going to mean in the future, far-reaching legislation and regulatory changes, and we're going to need to engage with other progressives in building the political power to reform and restructure the public policies that need to change. But obviously, we have to start with smaller steps. I think one of the exciting things that I see people getting really involved in today is this campaign to label genetically engineered food. And the initiative in California did lose, but people are coming back again and figuring out how to have legislation that will educate more people and perhaps in the future to do another initiative. There's a very exciting initiative in Washington State that actually has a very good chance of winning. It's a wonderful coalition doing that. There are groups working on legislation in 15 states. In some of those states like Iowa, New Mexico, Connecticut, these aren't necessarily states that you think of as being the center of the food movement. Now, it will take time for legislation to pass and for this great energy to result in labeling. But I think that having people involved at the local and the state level is what we need to do to start engaging people not only on genetic engineering, but the bigger issues. Because the real beneficiaries of the apathy and cynicism that we see that people have towards the political system are these companies. And so we need an entry point for people. It could be doing a local resolution at their city council to label genetically engineered food, or to in support of some initiative in the Farm Bill. We will be debating the Farm Bill nationally again in this Congress. There are many things in the Farm Bill that could improve the food system.
Absolutely.
Winona, I think that's what we need.
Yes. Winona, that is so, I'm so happy you brought that up, because the Farm Bill, now is the time to have this discussion and get involved. And when I was at EcoFarm, I had a really great opportunity to sit in on a workshop with Brian Leahy and also Sandra Schubert. She's the Undersecretary of the California Department of Food and Agriculture.
And Brian Leahy is the Director of the Department of Pesticide Regulations
here in California, both organic food advocates, all about sustainability. And they were saying exactly what you're saying, which is get involved, get on local committees, make your voices heard. It is more than voting with your dollar, because the government wants to hear specifically that you are involved at the legislative level. And we only have, 8 months or so to review and put in some pretty serious change with this Farm Bill. So, I'm really happy to hear you echoing these specific actions about how we, more than, in addition to the farmers, but as consumers, can get involved to make change.
Yes, and with every large movement and marketplace, and organic is growing double digits again, we have always seen for decades of years, in whatever marketplace it may be, the moment the marketplace matters and organic matters, other interests come in that are not steered by the ethical commitment to the change that is needed to be brought forth. So I'm not surprised about what we're seeing. I think it is time for a really good check-in on the industry, industrial food system and organic food system, and taking even more back what we have created. Because there is a lot of good and a lot of excitement that we see, and we don't want to lose this organic movement or weaken it, because it is the place of hope for thousands of new young farmers that are considering agriculture as their occupation again. So that's really wonderful. Winona, thank you for your book. How can people get more involved? What are a couple of really good resources to learn more about corporate power and what people can do?
Well, our website at Food and Water Watch is foodandwaterwatch.org. The book Foodopoly's website is foodopoly.org. I am on a cross-country speaking tour, and if people are interested in having me come to the community and talk about Foodopoly, I am happy to do that.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for all your work. That's Winona Howder, the author of Foodopoly and also the executive director of Food and Water Watch. Again, that website for the book is foodopoly.org, a great way to start. Thanks for all your work, Winona.
Thank you,
Wonderful.
Winona.
Thank you, and thank you for your great show and all the work you do.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Yes, Winona Howder. Wonderful. Good to shed light on that.
Another great thing that came out of that talk that I was able to sit in on at EcoFarm, Sandra Schubert, who I said was the undersecretary of the California Department of Food and Agriculture, said, we need to stand united. We need to make our voices heard, because right now we are talking about so many different topics that we're dividing ourselves against these huge corporations who have maybe a single focus or a single message, or who are lobbying and putting a lot of dollars in their interests. So we need to find a way to get more active and to get on the same page in order to promote a healthier food system.
And maybe it's not against those companies. Maybe it's working with corporations and making sure that they have the strongest ethical commitment in all their work as well. I think money and ethics can be blended.
Yes.
That is,
Thank
or
you.
Connected.
That's Thank really you. You're good at seeing those possibilities.
My hope. Yes. Well, I wouldn't be able to get out of bed if I didn't.
Thank you, Helga.
You're welcome.
But I
Coming
love that.
Up, yes.
I love that suggestion she said about getting on local committees and also leveraging the media. Do what you can to make your voices heard on this topic.
Yes, please. Please do so. Coming up is What's in Season, Mark. Whew, this is still a tweener time. We talked about tweener times a couple weeks ago, but it's more than citrus. There's something new coming, and it's coming up in just a couple minutes. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
What's in Season is coming up next. Stay tuned for more.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
SPUD stands for Sustainable Produce Urban Delivery. SPUD delivers the highest quality organic produce and the best locally sourced grocery items one can find directly to your doorstep. It's easy, it's convenient, and it supports your local economy. On every delivery day, SPUD takes at least 100 cars off the road that would have otherwise been driving to the grocery store. Reduce your carbon footprint, save time, and save money when grocery shopping with SPUD. Place your order today at spud.com. That's SPUD.com.
The Farmer Veteran Coalition is a nonprofit organization dedicated to provide veterans with resources, education, and technical assistance to prepare them to become successful farmers. After serving their country, many veterans are interested in working with the land but do not have a background in farming or ranching. Help the Farmer Veteran Coalition to assist veterans in starting a new career in sustainable agriculture. For more information, please visit farmvetco.org. That's farmvetco.org.
Eisenhower vaccine, England's got a new queen. Marciano Liberace, Santayana, goodbye.
We didn't start the fire. It was always burning since the world's been turning. We didn't start the fire. No, we didn't light it, but we tried to fight it.
Joseph Stalin, Malenkov, Nasser and Prokofiev.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And it is time, drum roll, here's Mark Mulcahy with What's in Season.
Well, today we're going to talk about something that people have been eating a lot of lately. And if anybody went to a Super Bowl party a few weeks back, or if anybody had, you know, holiday parties, they've probably been eating a lot of avocados. And actually, you know, the interesting thing is the Aztecs used to love their avocados, and especially since they came from that region of the world, the Aztecs used to love their avocados. The interesting thing about avocados is that they considered them a sexual stimulant. And so maybe people shouldn't be giving strawberries to their sweetheart on this Valentine's Day that just passed. Maybe they should have considered giving them avocados.
Here, honey, here are three avocados. Yeah.
It's all in the way you give them, Helga. I would think you'd understand that. anyway, Earl, we're talking about avocados. What kind of season we got going on here?
Hey, well,
hi, Earl.
Hello, everyone. It's another good year, and what makes them almost all good is that in California, there's production from all over the world, whether it's Chile or Mexico and even California. So we're in another good year. Peru is in production, but they're down. Chile is a little bit down, but Mexico has a great crop. And actually, California had a great crop that even lapped over into the next season. So what we experienced a couple weekends ago was, of course, the avocado of the weekend, and there happened to be a football game going on.
Good point.
What most of the country were eating was a Haas variety. And with the production being strong out of Mexico, that was where they were coming. But there are many, many different kind of avocados, but the Haas, it is my favorite. It is a favorite in the United States. It's enjoyed mostly by so many of us because of the high oil content and the creamy, nutty flavor. And that makes it real, real easy to enjoy.
And are you saying, Earl, that local production, we don't have Haas or any avocado for that matter year-round domestically here in the United States?
But yes, we do. We actually, on some years we can, and this is actually one of them. There is an area of middle of the northern, well, right around Santa Barbara area, that has some real special eco climates. That there are a couple small growers that are still picking from last year's crop. Mm. They're incredibly high in oil, very flavorful. They need to be actually treated differently than the normal avocado. You can't wait till they get too soft because they're so high in oil, they'll get rancid. And actually, there's a couple of them around.
Well, and so I really appreciate that you guys are talking about Haas because, you know, everybody eats them and, you know, they're the popular avocado and all that kind of stuff. But without, basically, if you like Haas, you should be eating some other varieties right now, because when they plant other varieties of avocado trees, it actually is kind of a healthy, non-toxic way to slow the spread of diseases that could affect Haas trees. Mm. And right now out there, the Fuerte is out there, the Zutano is out there, the Bacons are out there.
Yeah, bacon avocado.
And here's the deal, and Earl, you know this too, unless you've gone over to just being the average consumer. But you know these two, Earl, and they all have this very unique flavor profile that make them great for certain things when you're in your menu planning, right?
Yeah.
Like a bacon is kind of, you know, it's a really thin-skinned avocado, and it's got more of a yellow inside, but it's got kind of this nutty flavor, different than the Haas nuttiness.
Yeah, I find it much sweeter than the Haas.
Yeah, it's easier to peel. And right now they're in, and Zutanos are a fantastic avocado right now that's in place. If you can find a more of a pear shape, but a very light, delicate flavor that would be really good in fruit salads.
Ooh, I like where you're going.
That's really, really accurate, Mark. Yeah, avocados can be broken down into two categories, two of black and green. And the green ones, as they ripen, do not turn black. And, of course, what they consider the black ones start out green, and they as they ripen, they get black. The thin skins have some great flavor profiles. Many people enjoy them over the Haas because they're not so heavily flavored, where they completely overtake whatever component they're in. So lots of different uses for lots of different avocados. There's really virtually hundreds. We see maybe 10 varieties,
right?
And enjoy them when you can, and enjoy them now because they're around now. They're just starting, and we want to keep these around for our heritage, you know. Know these things. In 10 years, if we're not enjoying them, they're going to be a thing of a past, like the Edsel.
Well,
such a good message. Eat them to preserve them.
I love that. And I can't wait to try that Edsel avocado.
Yes.
Anyway, Earl, thank you so much. Earl Herrick, the voice of the San Francisco produce market, joining us today from Earl's Organic Produce.
So great. Thank you, Earl.
Thanks, Earl.
We appreciate you being on.
Great talking to you.
Okay, bye-bye.
What a great message. Yes, eat them to preserve them.
Yeah. And on my blog the next week, I will have how to freeze them, how to store them, how to pick them, that type of thing. We didn't get to that today, so I'll make sure I put that in the
make
blog.
Sure it's heavy
and I'll make
for
sure
its
to
size.
Read it.
Make sure
it's
sure.
heavy for its size. Yes.
It was such a great show, and I think that we have a little bit of time. Helga, do you have an organic moment this week?
Yes, we're almost out of time, but I do want to talk about a little reflection that I had. I call it the rust of life. I was on a road trip the other day down the coast on Highway 1 here in California, and I stopped at Swanton Berry Farms, an all-organic, unionized, worker-owned berry farm. There's a small farm store I like to stop at, a little shack where they sell like berry tarts and pies and chocolate-covered berries and jams. And I pulled up and I walked to the door when I saw an old metal sign that has been hanging there outside the store for just about 12 years. The sign says California Certified Organic Farmers and tells anyone who walks in that this operation is certified organic. I know how old it is because I hung it there. I was the marketing director for CCOF at that time, and I mounted the sign hoping it would communicate the CCOF brand far and wide to everyone stopping to get their chocolate fix, chocolate-covered berry fix, really. I think the sign did its job. It worked hard. It's showing off 12 years of wear and tear, rust and dirt, sunshine and salty storms there at the coast. In a couple of years, I'm sure it will be replaced by someone else, and it's a somber thought to know that then nobody will remember who hung it. And that's so true for so much of the world. We have no idea how things came about. They were just there when we got there. So the sign at Swanton Berry Farms reminded me about all the fine work humans have done so that we can be here right now to move our evolution forward, food system or not. Thank you to all past generations for your contributions. It's an honor to continue the work.
Hmm. Well, I never realized just how the impact that you've had on the planet, and I just want to say thank you, Helga. I really appreciate that.
But yes, you're so welcome, Mark.
Because yeah. I've passed that sign many times, and I've always wondered, who hung that sign?
I know.
And now I know.
Yeah. And I do want to add to the avocados, actually, Panza Verde. I went to a retreat in Antigua in Guatemala, and there's a story that the people who fought for their freedom in the old town of Antigua in Guatemala were able to sustain themselves and survive on avocados. That's why they're called the Panza Verdes. It's like a very proud title of people who were fighting for the independence through avocados, by eating avocados for months and years.
Eat them to preserve
so,
them.
So, yes, full circle.
And we have an exciting show coming up next week, yeah?
We do. We will talk about home deliveries of organic, not just produce, but groceries at large. So that's coming up next week.
Yeah, you know, this home delivery thing is not a new idea, but it's actually finally being done in a way that, you know, people are getting it down. Who we get to talk to next week, I'm going to leave that a secret, have some really great programs from juicing to baby boxes to all these things that can that are really customized towards how people are living today.
Yeah, organic diapers, like really the entire world taking off cars off the road, making it really convenient and offering the highest integrity.
Not just at home, but in the office too for corporate wellness.
Cool. That's all next week.
And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a proud production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer, Kristen Ponger. Studio engineer, Robert Costa. Underwriting production, Mark Van Gelder. Thank you all.
If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, go to iTunes or anorganicconversation.com.
And you can follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/anorganicconversation.
We're your hosts, Helga Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sita Rani Palomar.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.